Okay. We're holding on then days on the days by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, the Elu Dvarim She'ein Chayavan Aleihem Mishum Pigul. The following things, if a person eats them, he's not Chayav Kores for eating pigles. Basically, we're going to be talking about things where the rule of pigul is, it has to be that doing the matir, doing the avoda of the matir, he's having in mind the thought of chutzas manoi as far as something else, as far as the emurim or the meat. Here, these things themselves are the matir, and therefore pigul is not, and therefore pigul is not applicable to them. So hakoymetz, the koymetz of the mincha. So in other words, if he does the knitzer, having in mind a thought of chutzas manoi, which is going to make korban pigul. Now, if he eats the koymetz, he's not chayav koros because pigul will only apply. This is going to apply across the Mishnah. Pigul is going to apply only to things where there's some other matter for it. There's something else that makes it culture. The koymetz itself is not the koymetz itself. It's not something that has a matir. It itself is a matir. Tosfos has a long discussion over here, Bechlal, about the question, wait a minute, if you don't offer the koymetz, then anyway the mincha is posel. So therefore, and if the koymetz is burnt, then you can't eat it anyhow. Or once it's burnt, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, then it loses its status of pigle anyhow. So what exactly is the scenario over here that we're talking about? Tosfos brings from Rashi in Menachos, we can be talking about where most of it caught on fire, and that's already considered that the matir was already offered. But you still have some part of it is edible, and Tosfos goes and discusses the ins and outs of that. Anyway, Tosfos ends up saying the reason behind this din and the various other one in the Mishnah, not so much like Rashi says because it itself is a matter, but because precisely that. How are you going to have it? If you eat it without it being offered on the Mizbeach, then the korban is possible anyhow. It's not nikvah b'pigul. And if it was already burnt, then the whole thing is not considered pigul anymore, as the Gemara is going to discuss. So that would be the reason why pigul doesn't apply to eating the koymetz, not because it's the matzah, but because practically speaking, there's no way to accomplish it and still have the mincha have had all its proper avodas done and it be acceptable as a full-fledged korban. Anyway, so that's the koymetz. The ketodas that's offered on the Yimanim is their hapnimi, same thing. There's no matter for it. It itself is its own matter. And they also discuss what avoda exactly would there be by the ketodas. You don't have shritta, you don't have kabbalah, etc. By ketodas, the one thing you have is halacha. So according to the pshim, and now we learned in the first parak, the pshim and holds that Piggle, that the thought of pigle is not going to pass by halacha because halacha is dispensable. You don't necessarily need halacha. It's possible to do it right next to the mizbeach. So they talk about that maybe you were talking about specifically the ketores of Yom Kippur, where the Kohen Gadol has to take it in his hands, chafina, that itself is considered an avoda, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, so maybe therefore then it would be relevant to have a thought of pigle, and nevertheless we're saying if a person could become pigle, but if a person now ate that ketores, not that it's edible, but whatever. If he ate it anyway, then he wouldn't be chayav kares, because again, it's not the matzah for something else. It itself is the matzah. Next, the halavoina. The next thing is the lavoina that's offered together with the koymetz of a mincha. Tosfos points out that the koymetz makes the lavoina able to be offered on a mizbeach. So therefore, it is exactly like the meat of a korban where the blood is matzah to be eaten. It is true, Tosfos points out, you could offer the lavoina before the koymetz, and we touched on that yesterday, but you certainly can't offer it before the knitzer. Nevertheless, Tosfos gives a reason to explain why the lavoina should not be considered part of the korban. The whole concept of pigul we learn from Shlomim, and the difference is that with a Shlomim, what do you have? You have two steps. You have to sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach. Then you have to burn the emurim on the mizbeach. Then the meat becomes mutar to eat. Now, what happens if in between, after you sprinkled the blood, the emurim went missing or got lost or who knows what happened to them? The korban is still kosher to eat because the emurim in that sense are not active. As opposed to over here, the fact is that until you offer the lavoina, you cannot eat the mincha, and therefore lavoina itself is considered the matir, and again, it's not something that has a matir of its own. Anyway, the Mishnah continues, other examples, or minchas koyanim, a mincha that a koyan brings, which is completely burnt on the mizbeach, there's no kmitza from it, So it has no matter. Or minchas koyin mashiach, the mincha of the koyin mashiach, the chavite koyin gadol that he brings every day, the same exact mincha that a regular koyin brings the first time he ever does the avodah, the koyin gadol brings it every single day.
Koyin mashiach is
koyin mashiach means a koyin gadol. Yeah, strictly speaking, it's not only the koyin mashiach. Strictly speaking, it applies to even to a koyin who was made koyin gadol by wearing the eight big dekorna. But the Mishnah is using minchas koyin mashiach in a bit of a loose sense. It means the koyin gadol. The hadam, the blood itself, the blood of the korban itself is matzah. So if a person were to eat, so if you have a korban, so then again, the point with all of these things is that if a korban became pigle and a person ate one of these things, he's not chayav karis for it. So now, if a person were to take the blood of a korban that became pigle and eat it, he wouldn't be chayav karis on the grounds of pigle. He might be chayav karis on the grounds of eating blood. That's another matter, but at least he's not chayav karis for pigle. And Rav Meir adds also nesachim that are brought by themselves. Now you have certain korbanos come together with nesachim. First of all, you can have, it's possible for a person to donate nesachim by themselves. A person can say, I am going to bring just the flour, wine, and oil that make up nesachim. So then there's no matzah because then they themselves are completely offered on the mizbeach. But you can also have where they're brought together with a korban, such as an oil or a shlamim, but they don't necessarily have to be brought on the same day. So Rashi points out, if they are brought on the same day at the same time as the korban, then yes, if the korban becomes pigle, the nesachim will be pigle as well. And then if the person eats them, he will be chayav karis, because then again, the blood of the korban being sprinkled on the mizbeach is matzah then to be offered on the mizbeach. But if they're being brought separately, if the person brings them, let's say, the next day or a few days later, and La Halacha is able to do that, then that's what we're talking about over here. Now, if while the Koyan is doing the avoda of those Nesachim, if he has a thought of pigle, then a person won't be Chayav Koris for eating from those Nesachim. Give it a mayor. That's what a mayor says. Not only the ones that are brought separately, even the ones that are brought together with the animal. Since you could bring it tomorrow, then therefore it's not really, even though Sereb Meir is saying if they're being brought together with the korban, then we have to say the blood of the korban is being mocked to them to be offered. Therefore, when the korban becomes pigle, then they become pigle as well, and the usual rules of pigle apply. The Chum say that's true, but the fact is you could have brought them the next day, you could have brought them a different time, and therefore we always consider them to be something separate and not something where the korban is matter them, but rather they're matter themselves to be offered on the Mizbeach, and therefore, if a person eats them, then he's not chayav for pigle. Rashi actually mentions there was a girsa that had the words that listed minchas nesachim in the list at the top of the Amud, but then Rashi takes it out because here a mayor and the chachamim are going to go on to argue about it. Tosfos explains that there might be a reason that there might be a reason to include it. Next, here's another one. The log shemen shal metzorda, the log of oil that a metzorda brings with his korbanos. A metzorda, when he's done his tzaras, the last stage of his tzara, he brings a couple of korbanos. One of them is an oshan. They take the blood of the oshan and the kohen puts some of it on his right ear, his right thumb and his right big toe. After that, there's a lug of oil. The Kohen takes the lug and sprinkles and dips his finger in and sprinkles it seven times in the direction of the Heichel. He's standing in the Azara. He sprinkles it in the direction of the Heichel. Then he takes some of it and puts it on the ear, in the same places on the Metzora's ear, thumb, and toe, and then puts some on his head, and the rest of it is available for the Kohenim to eat. It's one of their 24 Matnas Kohona. So now we're saying that Lug Shemen Shom Metzora. Also, if the oshem became pigle, then the loig shemen is not subject to pigle in the sense that if a koyan ate a kazayas of that oil, he wouldn't be chayav karis. Why not? So Rashi explains, because again, you could have a person could bring the oshem and bring the lug of oil later on. He's not obligated to bring them both at the same time. So again, therefore, we can't really say that it's being mutter because of the oshem being shechted and the blood being applied. It's really considered a separate thing.
However, to Rav Meir, there would be the same achleka.
No, the pashtos. Well, right. So if he brought it together with it, maybe you'd have the same achlekas. Yeah. Reb Shimon, okay, well, so that's actually, that's a different machlokas. So here, Reb Shimon Omer Ein Chayavin Olam Mishum Pigul. So Reb Shimon says that Pigul will not apply to it for the reason that we just said. Reb Meir Omer Chayavin Olam Mishum Pigul Shadama Osham Matirei. Reb Meir says, yes, yeah, same thing. If he brings it together with the Osham, then it'll have the same rule as the Minchas Nesachim. It'll become Pigul along with the Osham. I agree, says Reb Meir. If he brings it separately, then you're right, it won't be Pigul. Next, continues the Mishnah. V'chol sheyeshloi maturin bein la'odem bein la'mizbeach. Anytime you have a korban that makes something mutter, whether it makes it mutter for a person to eat, or whether it makes it mutter for the mizbeach to have it burnt on, chayavin ala mishum pigul. Then a person will be chayav for eating in his pigul. Meaning, let's go through the list. For example, ha'ola domer matis psar ala mizbeach va'ola la'koyanim. When you bring a korban oila, when you sprinkle the blood on a mizbeach, the result is that now the meat of it can be offered on a mizbeach. You can't do that before the blood is sprinkled. And also it makes that the skin of the korban is now available to the kohenim. Later on in the Masechta, it talks about in detail, the basic rule is that when it comes to, there's a difference between different types of korbanos. Who gets the skin? When it comes to an oila, the pasuk says or ha'ola asher hikriv la'koyin lo yiyah. So it goes to the koyin who offer. Actually, it goes to the mishmer of koyinim from that contained the korban. From whom was the koyin who offered this korban? Keep in mind, by the way, skin is worth quite a bit of money. So this was a nice perk for the koyinim. The Gemara, by the way, mentions in Psachim that at one point there were tough guy Kohenim, people from powerful families, who were grabbing these skins for themselves. So eventually the owners of the Korbanos started saying in advance, we're donating those skins to Hekdesh. Because even these tough guy Kohenim would be afraid to tamper with Hekdesh. Eventually, the Gemara mentions over there, Hekdesh made so much money from it, they were able to plate the Hekel with thick squares of gold. That's how much money they made from all these skins. Anyway, the point is that so now again, when the
skins so expensive, they can use it.
They can use them for leather and parchment and all kinds. Nowadays, think of it also, especially for example, you want something waterproof. Nowadays, you make it out of plastic. Back then, they didn't have, you know, so a skin would be something very valuable for that kind of thing. So here, when you sprinkle the blood of the oila, then now it makes it not only the meat, the meat and the limbs and whatever can be burnt on the mizbeach, but also that now the skin is going to be given to the kohenim. Now, the skin itself, to be sure, if a person were to eat it, he's not usually going to be chayav kares for it anyhow, because the skin is not edible. But the Rashash points out, you know, for one thing, we learned earlier in the Masech, that the Mishnah mentions in Chulin, there are certain kinds of skins that are actually very soft and edible. For example, the skin by the tail and some other places on the body. So we could be talking about those kinds of skins. Here's another example. Oila sa'oif. What about a bird oila? Same thing. Dama matas psar al mizbeach. When the blood of it is applied to the mizbeach, now the actual body of the bird, the meat of it, can be burnt on the mizbeach. So therefore, in other words, again, so the point is that pigul, that these things, therefore, are subject to the dinim of pigul. So now, in other words, if a person had a thor, chutz manai, when he's doing one of the four avodas of an oila, why is it that he can be chayav kares for eating from it afterwards? Because once the blood is sprinkled, then now you have a heter. Now you have the meat becomes available for what it's supposed to be done, and the skin is available for what it's supposed to be done. Same thing with an oila sa'oif. Similarly, chata sa'oif, when you have a bird chatas, doma matif sara l'kayim. There's nothing other than the blood of an chata sa'oif that's offered on a mizbeach. All the rest of it goes to the kohenim. But that's the point. Once the blood is applied properly to the mizbeach, then the kohenim can eat the meat of it. Incidentally, by the way, you have a chata sa'oif is not shechted in the usual way with a knife. You do melika by the kohen cutting through the neck with a fingernail. Usually that would make a bird nevela. Here you have a special gzeres hakosev that the kohenim should eat it. Anyway, parim anisrach. Here's another example. Parim anisrach mosirim anisrachim. What about the various cases that we've been discussing throughout the perek of the parim and seirim that have to be burnt outside the machna? The par and sor of Yom Kippur, the par halam davar shel tzibur, the par kohen mashiach, the seirim that the tzibur brings if based in mistakenly allowed them avodah zarah. So all of those, and now the meat of them is not eaten. Nevertheless, domen matir asemurei and likrav. The blood, once the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, now it makes that the imurim can be offered on the mizbeach. And therefore, again, if you were to have a thought of pigul, if you were to have a thought that he plans to burn some of those imurim the next day while he's doing one of the four avodas of the blood, then the so Rashi says the parim would become pigul, which implies that even the meat of them would become pigul. Some kodshim, one of the major mafoshim on Masech, that changes that to nispaglo imurim, that the imurim become pigul because the meat itself is meant to be burnt outside Yerushalayim, not necessarily would the dinim of pigul apply to it, but at least the dinim of imurim would apply. At least the dinim would apply to the imurim, which are meant to be sprinkled, which are meant to be offered on the mizbeach. In any case, so there you have a bunch of examples, even though you have a korban, which on the face of it is not meant to be eaten, but nevertheless there is a matir within that korban, and therefore if a person now were to eat afterwards something from that korban, then he'd be chayav karis.
At least the emurim
in the case of the parim and istrachim, at least the emurim in the case of a chatas oif would be the whole thing, right? Reb Shimon disagrees with that last point. Kol she'ena al mizbeach hachitzin k'shlomim, any korban which is not offered on mizbeach hachitzin, like a shlomim is, ein chayav another mishum pigul, then it's not subject to the whole concept of pigul. A person is not chayav for the whole concept of pigul for it in the first place, because the whole context where it talks about pigul in the Torah is in connection with a shlomim. So therefore he learns that a korban, in order to be subject to pigul, has to be like a shlomim, where it's offered on the mizbeach hachitzin. In the case of the parim and the siurim and the serafim, the blood does not go on the mizbeach hachitzin, it goes on the mizbeach hapinimi. The emurim, fine, are burnt on the mizbeach hachitzin, but the rest of it is taken outside the Yerushalayim and burnt. So Reb Shimon holds that the whole concept of pigul does not apply to such korbanos, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about why he holds that. So the Gemara starts off, Oma Ola, koimetz pigul sheheloi agabe mizbeach. If you were to take a koimetz of a mincha that became pigul, so again, he did the kmitzah, he did one of the other avodas, having in mind that he's going to eat the shirayim past the proper time. Shehele al gabei mizbeach. Now, if you were to take that koimetz and offer it up onto the mizbeach and bring it up onto the mizbeach, poka pigulei mimenu. So Ula says the din of pigul goes away from it. That koimetz is no longer considered pigul. Because Ula says a kavachomer, im acher maybe be pigul. If the koymetz is able to make the rest of the mincha be pigul, who asks me? Like koshkin, how much more so it itself? He must say,
I lost it.
Okay, well that's the Gemara is going to have to ask that Ula thinks.
No, I didn't hear the words.
Okay, Ula is saying. So Ula is saying, if you have a mincha that became pigul. So let's say the kohen takes the mincha, he does kmitza from it. Kmitza in a mincha corresponds to shchita in an animal korban. So while he's doing that kmitza, he has in mind, I'm going to eat these shirayim tomorrow. No good. The korban is now on its way to becoming pigul. And once that koimetz is offered on the mizbeach, then it will in fact be pigul. And then a person would be chayav koris from it. However, Ula is saying that once that koimetz was put on the mizbeach, then the din of pigul goes away from that koimetz. Because he says, im acherim, maybe the day pigul, if the koimetz is able to cause the rest of the mincha to be pigul, who asks me, like, koshiken, how much more so it itself? He wants a mic armor. What is Ula saying? That doesn't seem to fit. You're trying to say that the pigul goes away from it, and you're explaining why it's able to make it pigul. Seems backwards. The answer is what Ula means. Im einem iskabel. Think of it, says Ula. If the koimetz was not going to be acceptable to be burnt on the mizbeach, then how could it possibly make anything else pigul? Because, in other words, the point is that we have this concept, nikba pigul. In order for a korban to be officially pigul, it has to be that the matir was offered on the mizbeach, or vavad shiyakva matir k'mitzvaseh, as the Gemara, as the Mishnah had phrased it earlier in the Masechta. So until that korban is offered on the mizbeach, then the korban is not going to actually be pigul. So now he's saying it has to be that it's acceptable to be offered on the mizbeach.
So how can you have a leftover?
So therefore, of necessity, it can't be considered pigul anymore. So the question is, what does Ula want to tell us exactly? Does he mean that a person would not be chayev for eating that koyim? That's exactly. The Tameina, we just said that in the Mishnah. Eilu dvarim she'en chayev ala mishum pigul, ha'koyim etzvak toris v'alavoyno, o minchas koyim, o minchas koyim mashiach, o minchas esachim ba'adom. So we see in the Mishnah that if a person eats the koyim, he's not chayev koyim. So what's Ula's chiddush? And not only that, Rashi points out, it means the Mishnah is saying not even if they didn't put it on the Mizbeach yet, just the fact that even when the koimetz is still on the ground or in a klee shortest or whatever, then still a person is not chayav karis for eating it. Right. So what is Ula telling us? When you put it on the Mizbeach, then the din of pigul goes away. It comes out from our Mishnah that it's never going to be subject to the din of pigul b'chlal if he eats the koimetz wherever it is. Erlodim Olu Lo Yerudu. You're going to say that Ula wants to tell us the concept called him Olu Lo Yerudu, which is discussed. There's a perek later on in Armasechta that deals with those dinim in detail. It's come up a few times in Armasechta. Sometimes you have something which is not supposed to be placed on the Mizbeach in the first place, but once it was placed on there, then b'dieved we leave it up there and we leave it. So you're going to say that that's what it means, that if the koimetz of a mincha that's pigul was placed on the mizbeach, and you shouldn't have put it there in the first place, but b'dieved you leave it over there. Again, Tanena, we have a Mishnah later in our Masechta, giving a list of things that im olu lo yerdu. Halon, one of them is where pieces of a korban were left overnight, and they became posel. V'hayodze, or where a murim were taken out of the azara. V'hatome, or they became tome. V'shenishchak chutzlas mane v'chutzlas mekoyme. Or a korban that was shechted with the thought of chutzlas mane, which makes it pigle, or chutzlas mekoyme, which makes it posel. All of those im olu lo yerdu. If they go up onto the zeach, we don't take them down. So what's all this chiddush? The Elodim Yodim Yodu Yalu. Maybe Ula wants to tell us the other way around. Now you have the Mishnah describes over there in that parak that all these things in Olu La Yodu, if they were taken off of the Mizbeach, even though they shouldn't have been, then you don't put them back on. Mm-hmm. So you're going to say that's what he's telling. So he was saying that with the Koimetz, it's not like that. Dim Yodu Yalu. Even if you have this Mincha that was Pigle, and you put the Koimetz on the Mizbeach, which you weren't supposed to, then you took it off. But now he's going to tell you, now that it's not possible anymore, if it was taken off the Mizbeach, then by all means put it back on. No, Honami Tanena, we have the Mishnah over there, says the opposite of that. Kishem Shem Olu Lo Yerdu, Kachim Yerdu Lo Yalu.
Why wouldn't it be possible anymore according to Ula?
That's what we're trying to figure out. Why
is he saying Ula, though?
Ula is saying Kavachoyma. He's saying Kavachoyma, right, that it has to be that it's acceptable on the Mizbeach, otherwise, how does the korban become pigle?
Right.
But the Mishnah says exactly the opposite. Kishem Shem Olu Lo Yerdu, all these things, just like if they were put up on the Mizbeach, the Dieved, you don't take them off. Now, there are other psalim that it describes over there in the Mishnah that you do take them off. We're not addressing those. We're addressing that among all the ones that you leave on there, or include one of the lists of the ones that everybody agrees that you leave on there is the case where it became pigle. Mm-hmm. And the Mishnah says, "Kashem shem olol yerdu, kachim yerdu." The same way, if you did put it on his back and then you took it off, lo yalu, you don't put him back on. So then, in that case, then that Mishnah would contradict Ula. So what is Ula trying to tell us? The answer is leitzricha shemoshla behena ur. Ula has to tell us the case where the fire already started burning it. So now what we're saying is that even though usually then again, once you have im yodu lo yalu. Usually you have these things that are possible if they were taken off, if they were put on the mizbeach and then taken off, you don't put them back on again. But if you were moshla by ha'ur, then it's considered lachma shel mizbeach. It's already considered the food of the mizbeach, and therefore even if you chose, so it caught on fire, then somebody took it off. Now you should still go put it back on again. Because it became lachma shel mizbeach, because it became the food of the mizbeach, and therefore you should put it back on over there. So that would be Ula's chiddush that now we're talking about that. That's the point that he's saying that now poka pigul imenu, the concept of being pigul has gone away, and now you should put it back on the mizbeach no matter what. The question is hanami olma Ula chodazimna, but Ula already said that in a different context. The olma Ula, because Ula says exactly that. Loy shanu, when we talk about in that Mishnah im yodu lo yalu, that if you take them off, you don't put them back on. That would only be elashale moshla behena ur, only if the fire did not start burning them. Ava moshla behena ur, but if the fire already started burning them yalu, you do put them back because they're lach meisham is there. So why does Ula have to repeat the same point again over here in the case of equipments? And the answer is Mao de Tema, because if you only had the first statement of Ula, the statement that we just quoted in connection with the Masechta, with the Mishnah later in our Masechta, you would say, Hani Mili, you know when you're saying that, it's Lach Mishnah Mizbeach, Eber de Mechubar. When you have a limb of a korban, which is all connected together. So Rashi points out, you could argue that if part of the limb caught on fire, fine, you have to leave the rest of it on the Mizbeach, and even if you took it off after it was partially burned, you have to put it back, because once part of it became Lach Mishal Mizbeach, then the whole thing is. Aber Koimetz de Mifrat, but the Koimetz is, to begin with, separated. It's, after all, made of flour for the Mincha, that was originally crumbly. So you would think, Amaloy, you would think that maybe not. Whatever got burnt, then fine, leave on the Mizbeach. But whatever didn't catch fire yet, if you took it off the Mizbeach, and remember, this Mincha is Pigle, by all means, keep it off. Kamash Malon, therefore, Ula has to tell us that not. Nevertheless, the whole Koimetz is considered one big thing, and once part of it became Lach Meshom Mizbeach, then the rest of it also does, and we don't consider it Pigle anymore. So there was an interesting bit of lomdos on this that the Mishnah Melech explains that there's a difference between actually here the Gemara seems to equate the two dinim of him yodu yalu and what Ula is saying that it's not considered pigul anymore. The Mishnah Melech points out there's actually a difference. It's enough that any part of it caught on fire that's already considered lach mishum mizbeach and has reason to put it back on. But to say that it shouldn't, that the dinim of pigul shouldn't apply to it anymore and therefore that a person wouldn't that to say that it shouldn't be considered pigul anymore, that you need that most of it caught on fire.
I didn't load that up. Okay.
Okay. So that's a side point. Fine. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Achoi. So Rav Achoi says, in that case, we can deduce a dinim. We can deduce a din from that. Hilka, high koimetz pigul. If you have a koimetz of a mincha that became pigul, the palge mochis ha'aro, palge aske amarocha, what if he didn't put the whole thing on the mizbeach? What if he left half of it on the ground in the klisharis, whatever, and half of it he brought up to the ma'arocha? If now the fire started burning, the half that he put on the mizbeach, mastikne lekula lechatzchila, we will put all of it on the mizbeach, lachatchila, even the part that had stayed behind.
Even though it wasn't on
the mizbeach, because once one half of it was burnt, then all of it becomes lach mishum mizbeach. Tosfos actually says,
but he didn't go on the mizbeach. He had to have it with him. He put it on the floor.
No, that's the point. He did the koymetz. He put it in the klisharis. Now he took half of that koymetz and offered it up on the mizbeach and left the other half behind. So now Rabbi Choy is telling us to still go and put the other half on the mizbeach as well.
Does it go from his hand directly onto the fire?
No, it goes from his hand into a kli shoreis.
Uh-huh.
You have four avodis by mincha, just as you do by an animal korban.
Uh-huh.
The mitzvah corresponds to shchita. The next thing is, with the blood, you have to have kabbalah. You have to receive it in a kli shoreis. With a mincha, the corresponding thing is you take the koyman and put it into a kli shoreis.
So you're saying he left half of it on the floor
behind. Well, now on the floor. When we say on the floor, we mean a keli. We mean a keli that somebody is holding on the floor of the Azariah. Tosfos actually learns that not. Tosfos learns it wouldn't mean that it was never placed on the mizbeach in the first place. In that case, we actually wouldn't put the other half. Tosfos learns at the beginning of the sugya what it means is that other half was put on the mizbeach and then taken down. Then you would bring it back up. And Tosfos says over there that Rashi actually would disagree and say that it means that the Gemara means here exactly what it sounds like. Even if that second half was never on the Mizbeach in the first place, nonetheless, you would bring it up by virtue of the first half having become Lach Mishom Mizbeach.
Why did Tosfos and Rashi disagree on this?
Because Tosfos, it's a Tosfos that begins on Mendez on the Bays and continues on to Mem Gimel Amud Aleph and discusses this point that we said in the Mishnah that a koymetz is, that Rashi had said the koymetz, a person is not chayav for eating because emlay matirin. Tosfos had a whole discussion over there about, wait, anyway, have, like we're discussing over here. If the koymetz wasn't offered, the mincha never becomes pigul in the first place. And if it was already offered, then it was for saying over here, potam mena piguloi. So that leads into a whole discussion about this point of what if only half the claimants was offered, etc. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yitzchok, Amar Rav Yechanan, ha-pigul v'ha-noiser v'ha-tomeh shehelo megabe ha-mizbeach, any of these things, pigul, noiser, or tomeh, that were brought up onto the mizbeach, poka, isur mehen, then the isur goes away from them, and now, in other words, besides for pigul, which Ola was saying, that now that is potter for eating it, the same thing as far as noiser and the same thing as far as tomeh, all of those things, a person would be chayav kares for eating them, but now that they were brought up to the mizbeach, then the issur of pigul goes away. Rashi points out also as far as im yorad yala that even if you take them off the mizbeach, you would still put them up, you would still put them back up onto the mizbeach. Agos Habach actually discusses that point and is that. That you wouldn't necessarily say that if after it was brought up there before Moshla Bayur, that he wouldn't be chayav karis for eating it. What we mean is, in other words, though, that at least once it was partially burnt, then we're saying the Isser goes away. So Omer of Chista, Morei Dichi. Rav Chista says, master of the Shmua, in other words, he's talking to Rav Yitzchak, he's saying, you who taught this statement, how could that be? Mizbeach mikvah tahara? Is the mizbeach a mikvah that it kashers and is metahar things that were tomei? So how does that work? You're telling me that you take a piece, you're telling me that you take something of a korban that became tomei and you put it on a mizbeach and it becomes tahar? How does that work? Amar Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says, Shemosh Labahana Ur. We're not just talking about it was put on the Mizbeach. It already started to be burnt by the fire. So again, it became Lach Meshom Mizbeach. So in effect, yes, it became Tahar, not really a mitzvah, of course, but nevertheless, it still became Tahar to that extent that, again, if we were to take it off the Mizbeach at that point, we would put it back on, and that if a person were to eat it at that point, you wouldn't be Chayav Karis.
And again, what would Rashi's opinion be on that?
So here we're talking about the whole thing was put up on there. Rashi and Tosfos are arguing in the case of a koimetz where half of it was put on the mizbeach and half of it has not yet been. Whether we'd put the other half or not, Rashi says yes. Tosfos, Rashi doesn't explicitly say yes, but Tosfos infers from Rashi that Rashi would hold that yes, you do, and Tosfos themselves disagrees on that. But here we're talking about the whole thing. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Rav Yitzchok Bar Bisna. So Rav Yitzchok Bar Bisna says, I have a contradiction. You're telling me then that when you put it on a mizbeach and it starts getting burnt in the fire, then the tumor goes away. Now, we have a posuk that talks about a case where a person eats kodshim where he's tamei. You have a posuk that a person eats v'nefesh asher teichol basim mizbeach hashlamim v'tum osay olav v'nichusa. Now, what does v'tum osay olav mean? Does it mean the person is tamei or does it mean the korban is tamei? The Gemara is going to take up that point soon, but we're going to understand that the first the Gemara is going to bring, so the Gemara is going to bring a whole braisa soon, but right now the Gemara is bringing an excerpt from that braisa. The posuk says v'tum osay olav. How do we know that it refers to the person being tamei? Misha tuma perachas nimenzu, because we learn tum osay olav implies his tumor is on him, but in other words, it could have been removed. So that implies that we're talking about something where the tumor can go away. Yotza bosesh and tumor perachas imenu, as opposed to me. Once it becomes tumor, it can never become tahor. Well, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna says, V'im Issa, you're telling me it's possible to make this tumor not tumor anymore by putting it on the zdeach and having it burnt. Well, hare tumor perachas imenu ideor. Well, then you do have a case where tumor goes away from me. So how could the braisa say definitively that the tumor se olav necessarily has to refer to tumor sagduf, where the person is tumor? It could equally well refer to Tumas Basar, where the meat of the korban is tamei. And the answer is Amar Rav Aiden Mikva Kamyanin. Because we're talking about where the, oh, so I skipped a line. V'im Issa, if you're going to tell me that this works, had a Tumah Perachas Menu Aidei Or. Yeah, then Tumah goes away from it by the fire of the Mizbeach. And since the Braisa is not even entertaining that possibility, then no, the Tumah does not go away. Amar Rav Aiden Mikva Kamyanin. So Rav says, okay, you know, we mean that the Tumah goes away through a mikva. The meat of the korban, fine. You could still say, like Rav Yitzchok said, that it means that the tumah goes away by fire. But when you're talking about to have the tumah go away by a mikveh, the meat, once meat becomes tumah, you can't dip it in a mikveh to make it tahor. But a person becomes tumah, he dips in a mikveh. It says meaning mikveh ksiv. What do you mean? Does it say mikveh? It doesn't say mikveh in the pasuk over here. Then you should say davka refers to that. By the way, you have an interesting gemara in Sanhedrin where Min says to the Rabbahu, he says Hashem is described as a kohen. So now when he buried Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he toivel in afterwards? The Min, of course, you know, on the simple level, the Min has this notion that Hashem is just a bigger human being and has a goof, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, Rav Boho answers him in his own coin. He says, Hashem toiveled in fire. So the guy says, wait a minute, so since when is there such a thing as tevilah in fire? And then Rav Boho quotes him, or slightly misquotes him, a pasuk to say that, yeah, actually, ikur tevilah sebenura, the real way of toiveling ought to be in fire. But a boss of a dumb can't do that, and therefore Hashem sort of gives him a break and lets him toivel in water. But so what it really means, I mean, there's many, many different beforshim on what exactly that whole exchange meant, but here the Gemara is kind of doing the same kind of thing. Like, there might be such a thing as toiveling in fire, but here the pasuk is referring to toiveling in water. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, it doesn't say that in the pasuk.
Yeah.
And rather, a papa says, consider what's the context of the pasuk about the tumasa olav is talking about shlomim, and the meat of a shlomim, the lechazi lachraba, is not suitable to be offered on the mizbeach, right, because the meat of the shlomim is supposed to be eaten by the kohenim and the owners. So therefore, you can't say that if that was placed on the mizbeach, that the fire of the mizbeach should take away its tumah, because in fact, it doesn't work that way. The things, even the concept of olu lo yodu wouldn't apply to that, because You don't apply that to things that are not meant to go on the Mizbeach in the first place.
Right.
Then you have, for example, a murim of a korban that became tomei or pigul or what have you, fine. At least they were originally supposed to go, they would have gone on the Mizbeach had the korban been kosher, and therefore the dievet, they're acceptable in olu l'yodu. But the meat of the shlomim, for example, which is never meant to go on the Mizbeach in the first place, then that, im olu l'yodu, lach meshom Mizbeach or not. So therefore the braisa can still say the tumah se olav, implying that there's a way to take the tumah away, has to be referring to the person rather than the meat.
Right.
Ravina, Omar, Ravina gives a different answer. Ravina does not like that answer because the Pasuk also says, Asher LaShem, and that includes the Emurim. The fact is, a Shlomim does have parts that go on the Mizbeach, the Emurim. So you can't just say because the Pasuk is talking about a Shlomim, necessarily you have to refer it to the meat of the Korban. It could equally well be referring to the Emurim of the Korban. And then that wouldn't work because those are supposed to go on the Mizbeach, and those we do say in Ololo Yodu. Rather, Rabbi Norma, here's how you have to understand it. The Tum Osir Olav, when it says his Tuma or its Tuma is on him or on it, means Mish Tuma Parachas Menu Kru Sholem. It implies we're talking about something where the Tuma is able to go away when it's complete. A person becomes Tomei and he dips in the Mikveh and that's that. Yotza Bosser, as opposed to the meat. Dover Shein Tuma Parachas Kru Sholem El Kru Choser. With the meat, fine, you're going to say, like Rabbi Yitzchok said, that if you put it on a Mizbeach and it starts getting burnt, then the tumor goes away, but at that point it's not sholem anymore because part of it was burnt. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the pasuk is telling you that what is the case where what does the pasuk mean when it says the tumas olav has to be the kind of tumor which is possible the thing or the person is still intact and the tumor goes away. The only thing that can refer to is a person, not the meat. Okay, so gufa. Now let's get back to that.
One second. If you're going into gufa, give us a little bit of a rundown of what Ravina, Rav Papa answered on the question of.
Okay, so the question was that the question was based on what Rav Yitzchok says. It comes out that there is a way to make meat of a korban that was tomei to make it tahor, namely to put it in the fire of the mizbeach and it starts getting burnt. The fact is that the Gufa, the Braisa that the Gemara is going to quote now, is going to establish how we know when the Pasuk tells us, that the Pasuk says that Vitum Osei Olav, that's the key words. What does that mean? Vitum Osei Olav, the person has his tumma on him, or Vitum Osei Olav, the meat has a tumma on it.
Yeah.
The Pasuk is saying a person eats when he gets kodesh. The Braisa is going to explain that the words Vitum Osei Olav necessarily refer to a person. Because tuma perachas mimenu. So the question was, if you're going to tell me that it's possible to remove the tuma from meat by putting it into the fire of the mizbeach, then you don't have a basis to say that the tumah se olav anymore refers to the person being tumah. It could equally well refer to the korban being tumah. And therefore, that would mean that if a person eats a korban that became tumah, then he's chayav kares. Now it's not so. A person eats a korban that became tumah, he's over on a lav. So the question is, how can the Braisa be saying, how can we reconcile that the Braisa is saying it's a given that the Tum Oser Olav has to refer to a person because that's the only thing between the person and the meat where the tumor can be removed. Now you're telling me the meat, the tumor can also be removed. So first the Rava tried to say that it means Ayde Mikveh. But no, because it doesn't say Mikveh. So the Papa had said, because we're talking about specifically the meat of a Shlomim. The meat of a Shlomim is not within Rabbi Yitzchok's rule, because that only applies to things that are meant to go on the Mizbeach, and the meat of a Shlomim is not. Ravina is saying a different point. It could conceivably refer to the Emurim as well, but the Pasuk is implying, the words of the Tumas Olav imply that it has to be complete. It has to be able to become Tahor without any part of it being removed. That is true of a person, that's not true of the meat, because the meat does have to be, some of it has to be removed by definition. It has to be Mosh L'Bayor, which means that some of it is missing by the time it becomes Tahor. Okay, so now Gufa. Now let's go analyze that Braisa and see how we learn this point. The Pasuk says Vitum Osei Olav, that if a person eats from a Shlomim and Vitum Osei Olav, then he gets Kodesh. Vitum Osei Gufa Kosim Medav, where the Pasuk is talking about where the person himself is Tomei. After Oymer Vitum Osei Guf, so you're telling me that it means that he himself, that his body is Tomei. Oy Eine Ela Vitum Osei Boser, how do you know? Maybe it means where the meat of the Korban is Tomei. So first, Rashi explains the Braisa begins with the assumption that it means Tumas Aguf, because that's the context of the Psukim. The previous Pasuk says, V'habosar kol tohor yechal bosar, as far as the meat of a korban, anyone who is tohor can eat the meat. So we would assume that we're talking about then, that we're continuing to talk about the case where the person is not tohor, where he's not tomei. And now Rashi points out, even though the previous Pasuk is Lashon Nekeva, in this pasuk itself, the nefesh asher toichal, which is washing the keva, and then it continues to oser olav washing zacher, which maybe you would think refers to the meat. No, right? Therefore, the braisa is telling you that no, it is in fact referring to, it's still referring to tumas aguf. But you're going to say maybe not. Maybe taka it refers to tumas baser. Maybe you do have that distinction between washing zacher and washing the keva. Maybe the nefesh asher toichal baser is feminine. The tum osoi olav, his tumor is on him. Maybe then is going to refer to the meat. Baser is washing zacher. No. The reason why we don't say that, Nemakam Tum Osev, Nemalahavan Tum Osev, Tum Osev, Olav, Uboi. Because you have a Gzeira Shava. Here it says the Tum Oser Olav. You have a different pasuk that says Tum Oser Olav or Tum Oser Boy. Tum Oser Boy would refer to a pasuk in Parshas Chukas where it says Oid Tum Oser Boy. A person enters the Azara, a person enters the Bais Mikdash when he's Tomei. Tosfos discusses that it may instead be the pasuk of Tumaser Olav, which is a pasuk in Parshas Emor, which refers to a kohen who approaches the kodesh in the Tumaser Olav. In any case, Malaham Tumaser Gufa Kosim Adamber. Whether we're talking about the pasuk in Parshas Chukas about entering the Bais Hamikdash, or whether we're talking about the one in Emor about the kohenim who are Tomei approaching the kodesh, either way, those are talking about Tumaser Guf. Afkan the Tumaser Gufa Kosim Adamber. The same way over here, then the pasuk about where he eats from the korban and his chai of koris is to the Tumaser Olav. Therefore, also means that there's Tumaser Guf, that he himself is Tomei. That's one way of learning. Rabbi Yossi says, I agree with the din, but I'm going to learn it a different way. The kodshim are referred to in the plural. In the plural. But then the pasuk continues, in the singular olav. So that means the tumas agufa kosim adamber. Therefore, the pasuk is not talking about the tuma of the meat. Otherwise, it would have said the tum osam olav. So that's another way of learning that it means that the pasuk is now talking about tumas aguf, where the person is talking. Rebbe says here's another way of learning. But ochal the tumas aguf across the medamer. Since the pasuk continues that he eats, that implies that we're talking about that tumas aguf. And the Gemara is going to explain soon how does the word ochal mean that. So after we quote the whole braisa, the Gemara is going to start analyzing it. So that's a third way. Acherim Omru, and Acherim, which usually means Reb Meir, says a fourth one. This is the excerpt that the Gemara had quoted before to ask on Reb Yitzchok Abisna, the Tum Osei Olav. When the pasuk says the Tum Osei Olav implies Mishatumah Parachas Mimenu, implies that right now his Tumah is on him, but that Tumah could be removed. So that means Yotza Basar Shein Tumah Parachas Mimenu, as opposed to the meat where the Tumah does not go away, as we just discussed. Does that mean it can't go away at all? Maybe it means it could go away, but only in a mikveh of water, or not the meat of the korban which is meant to be eaten, or only when it's whole, as opposed to the meat can become no longer Tumah only by taking some of it away by burning some of it. Okay. So now let's analyze a particular line in that braisa. So most of the limudim are easy enough to understand. If we learn from the Gzeira Shava Tum Osa, it's easy enough to understand how that tells us it means Tumas Aguf. If you say we're learning from Loshen Rabim versus Loshen Yochid, fine. Acherim as well is easy enough to understand. When Rebbe says va'ochal means v'tumas agufa kosim medaber, so my mashma, where do you see from the word va'ochal that it means that he himself is Tomei? So there is Omar Rava. So Rava tells you, I'll explain to you, I'll give you an explanation from Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avodimi, but I want you to know something, says Rava. Kol krodel and farishle Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avodimi, any posik that you don't have an explanation from Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avodimi, v'chomas nisib le mefarshel or Rav Zeiri, or any Mishnah or Braisa where you don't have an explanation from Rav Zeiri, le mefarshel, you don't really have a good explanation. You want a good, solid explanation of a posik, go listen to what Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avodimi has to say. You want a good, solid explanation of a braisa, make sure you get an explanation from Rav Zeiri. Tochi Omer Rav Yitzchok Bar Avodimi, you should know, Rav Yitzchok Bar Avodimi explained over here how we know that this is referring, according to Rebbe, to Tumas Aguf. By the way, it seems there were two Rav Yitzchok Bar Avodimis. There was another one of the same name in the times of Rebbe, but here we're talking about the times of Rava, which is several generations later. Anyway, because the pasuk starts in Loshen Nekeva. The nefesh ki sigat, the pasuk begins by saying that the nefesh ki sigat b'chol tomei, which is Loshen sigat, is Loshen Nekeva. The si in the Loshen Nekeva. And then it finishes off also in Loshen Nekeva, the nichrasah nefesh. The Loshen Zohar b'emsa, but in the middle it sticks in something in Loshen Zohar, the ochal mipsar zeva hashlomim. Now it doesn't say v'ochlo, so the tumas aguf akosim medaber. Therefore, that tells us that we're talking about tumas aguf. Meaning, in other words, like this. Rashi explains. So you have two psukim over here. You have v'nefesh hashtoich abosam zevach hashlamim v'tum also olav v'nichusa. There also you have the same kind of thing. Toichal loshen nekeva v'tum also olav loshen zacher and v'nichusa loshen nekeva. Now the pasuk therefore is clearly here it was talking about tumas aguf and it already fit, it's no longer talking about tumas basar. Previously, the previous pasuk had been talking about where the meat became tamei. The basar actually yiga b'chol tamei lo yo'ochol. The meat that touches anything that would make it tamei, then you're not allowed to eat it. So that's referring to tumas basar. And then the pasuk finishes v'habaser as far as the meat kol tohor yechabaser anyone who's tohor can eat the meat. So that means in other words now we finished talking about tumas baser, now we're starting to talk about tumas aguf. So you would still think if it said because it says the nefesh hashatoichal, which is washing the kever, but then it says v'tum osay olav, which is washing zocher. You would think that that's going back to the meat. No, the pasuk, the fact that we see that where there are psukim back to back like that, that do that, that start in washing zocher and switch to washing the kever and go back to washing zocher. So therefore, now we see that both psukim in fact are talking about that one pasuk is talking about tumah, that both psukim rather are talking about tumas aguf, and both of them are telling us that a person is chayiv koris for eating the korban. V'anefesh asher toichal basar mizevach hashlamim asher l'Hashem v'tum oser al v'nichusa, and the next pasuk v'nefesh ki siga b'chol tameh with any kind of tumah v'ochal v'nichusa. So in both of them, so in other words, like this, in the second pasuk it's very clear we're talking about the person is tameh. Because it clearly says, the person touches anything that's tameh, and it mentions a few different types of tumah, tumas adam, tumas behemoth, tumas sheretz, and he eats the meat, v'nichusa. So it's clear from that one that we're talking about tumas aguf. It's loshen zocher, loshen nekeva, loshen zocher, doesn't matter, that's the style of the pasuk. Now you go back to the previous pasuk. V'anefesh asher toichal basar mizevach hashlamim asher l'Hashem v'tum osay olav v'nichusa. It's the same build, the same kind of syntax. Loshen zocher, loshen nekeva, loshen zocher. Or the other way around, loshen nekeva, loshen zocher, loshen nekeva. Nevertheless, because we have the second pasuk is clearly talking about tumas aguf, then necessarily so is the first one. You could understand that the first pasuk is continuing from the pasuk before it, which is referring to tumas basar. No, once you have in between basar called toho yechal basar, then it's clear that we're now starting a new topic, which is tumas aguf. And the fact that the last pasuk v'nefesh kisiga b'chol tameh is clearly referring to tumas aguf shows us that the pasuk before it, which has the same structure, is also talking about tumas aguf. That's Rav Yitzchak Bar Jimmy's explanation.
Even
though the middle has a lashon zocher, which you could misunderstand, is referring to the meat. But just like in the second pasuk, there's no question that it's referring to the person is tameh. Even though it uses the word v'ochal in lashon zocher, clearly we're talking about where he's tameh, because it's talking about that he touched some kind of tumah and v'nichusa. So therefore, the pasuk before it as well, when it says v'tumah se olav, also has to be referring to where he himself is tameh, not where the meat is tameh. So in other words, you have like this here. Let's put it in terms of the actual numbers of the psukim. You look in a chumash, we're dealing with pasuk yud tes chaf and chaf aleph. Pasuk yud tes says v'abosa asher yiga b'chol tameh lo yo'ochol. If the meat of a korban touches anything that's tameh, you cannot eat it. But if you start up, you have to burn it in fire. V'abosa, so that's talking about tumas basar. V'abosa, as far as the meat, called tohu yechal basar. Anyone who's tohu can eat the meat. That's pasuk yud tes. Pasuk Chof then continues, v'anefesh asher toichal basar mizevach hashlamim asher l'Hashem. If a person eats, and toichal is feminine, from the zevach hashlamim that belongs to Hashem, the tum osoy, and his tumah is on him, loshen zocher, v'nichrisa ha-nefesh ha-hi me'ameha, then feminine, that soul will be cut off, that soul, that person will get kares. Now, Pasuk Chof Aleph also has the same kind of structure. V'nefesh ki siga b'chol tameh, if she touches anything that's tameh, loshen mekeva. The tumas adam, etc. The ochal and he, sarzeva chasamim, the nichrisa, then she gets kares. Again, washing nekeva, zocher nekeva. So now the question was, pasuk kafalof is clearly dealing with tumas aguf. Pasuk yud tes is referring to tumas basar, where the meat is tameh. What about pasuk chof that's between them? So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Abdimi explains to us, since Pasuk Chof and Chof Aleph have the same structure, Nekeva, Zohar, Nekeva, And since Chof Aleph is clearly referring to Trumas Guf, then therefore Pasuk Chof is also. What about Pasuk Yud Tes? There you have, yes, Pasuk Yud Tes, no question. It was talking about Trumas Basar, but then it stopped and said a new topic by Basar called Tohar Yechal Basar, as far as the meat. If anybody is Tohar, they can eat the meat. So now, from the beginning, from the middle of Pasuk Yud Tes, and through Pasuk Chof and Chof Aleph, we're now dealing with matters of Truma and Tara of the person rather than the Kurban. Rashi brings from a relevant Gemara in Shavuos, why is it that it's going to be later in our perek, why you need multiple psukim to tell us about this concept that a person eats the Trumas HaGuf is Chai of Karis. But leaving that aside for the moment, we'll get back to that later on, but the point remains that both of those psukim, Chof and Chof Aleph, are both referring to Trumas HaGuf, and that's how Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini explains, when Rebbe says V'ochal, the Trumas HaGuf, HaKasim HaDaber, we're saying that because the V'ochal of the next Pasuk refers to Trumas HaGuf, and therefore the V'ochal of Pasuk Chof does also. That's Rebbe's limud. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Now, Rava had told us, if you don't have a posit that has a good explanation from Rabbi Yitzchak Barav Dini, then you don't have a good explanation, as he just explained over here. Let's give you an example of a braisa that you need Reb Zairi, without the Reb, is usually how he's called. Here, let me give you an example, Rava says, of a braisa, where if you don't have Zairi's explanation of it, you're not really going to understand it. Masnissa, so here's an example. The Tanya, we learned in a braisa, about these dinim of eating kodshim when a person is tamei. The Braita says, in nemru kalos. Now let's focus on the Torah mentions three cases of which a person is tamei. A person becomes, here we're talking Pasuk Chof Aleph. A person becomes tamei with Tumas Adam, or Tumas, or Behemat Meah, or Sheket Tamei. So why do we need all three of those, the Braita says? In nemru kalos. If it says kalos, lama nemru chamuris, then why does it say the more stringent ones? We have to figure out what kalos and chamuris are. Eventually we're going to have Zairi's explanation of what that means. So he says, in them kalos vole chamuris, because if it only said the kalos and not the chamuris, ha'isi omer, then he would have thought, ala kalos v'lav, if a person is over on the kalos, on the lenient things, whatever those are, we're going to define soon, then he's only over on a lav and gets malchus, v'ala chamuris the misa, but if he does the more stringent ones, then he's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, v'chach nemru chamuris, that is why the chamuris has to be listed to show that even for them, in a certain case that we're talking about over here, then he's chayiv only malchus. The nemu chamuris, the nemu kalis. But if I only said the more stringent ones and not the more lenient ones, how you see him? Ala chamuris yeh chayiv, ala kalis yeh potter. Then you would think maybe he's only chayiv malchus for the chamuris and completely potter for the kalis. L'chach nemu kalis. That is why the Torah has to specify kalis. So in other words, in short, the Braisa so far is telling us that when it comes to both the kalis and the chamuris, and we're going to explain soon what those refer to, both of them a person is chayiv malchus. Not more and not less. And if you only have the kalos, you would think that the chamuris is a worse punishment, and if it had only the chamuris, you would think that the kalos have a lesser punishment. So now let's figure out what the braisa is talking about. My kalos or my chamuris. What do we mean by that? Ilem a kalos maisa chamuris truma. Do you mean, are we referring now to the psukim in Parshas Emor, where it talks about, so we're talking about the Torah's Koinim, which is where this Braisa comes from, is in connection with the Pasuk in Parshas Emor that refers to, it's a Braisa that refers to eating Kodesh in the Tumas HaGuf. No, it's in Parshas Tzav. So what are the kalos and chamuris that it's referring to? Are we talking about Maaser Sheni versus Truma, where you have Sukkim and Parshas Emor that refer to eating Maaser Sheni and refer to eating Truma, where Maaser Sheni, all the person has to do is Tovel, he doesn't even need head of Shemesh, he can eat Maaser Sheni as a Tvol Yoim, as opposed to Truma, he has to wait for Tzeisa Kachovim. So you're going to say that's what the kalos and chamuris mean, respectively, is Maaser Sheni versus Truma, and either way, if a person eats them when he's Tomei, we're saying he's Chayav Malkus. But no, you can't say that. What do you mean, hoyisi oimer b'misa? What do you mean you would have thought that the chamuris, a person gets misa? And in fact, it's not so. The fact is, hashtanami hal b'misa. The fact is, a person who eats truma when he's tamei is chayiv misa b'dei shemayim. So what do you mean? I would have thought he's not chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and the Torah is telling you that I would have thought that he's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and I'm telling you that no, he's only chayiv malchus, but if a tamei eats truma, he is in fact chayiv misa. The two, and not only that, what does the Braisa mean? Iloi nemru ha'isa'im misa. You would have said that if it hadn't said the chamuris, I would think that the chamuris would be chayiv misa. Why? Daya lovim and adin lias kenodin. You have the general rule with the kalachomer that you have to apply the rule of daya. Why would you think to be mechayiv anything for eating truma is because you make a kalachomer? If ma'isa sheni, a person can't eat when he's tummy, how much more so truma? Well, then daya would tell us, don't go any further than that. Don't make him chayiv more than what he'd be chayiv by ma'isa sheni. So how would the Braisa even flow? Ella kalis tumas cherex chamuris tumas mes. Rather, you're going to have to answer that kalis and chamuris refer not to the type of food he's trying to eat, but rather the degree, the what he became tomei from. Tumas cherex would be considered tuma kala because it makes him. He's only tomei for one day, as opposed to tumas mes, he's tomei for 7 days. So the Braisa would have been saying that if the Pasuk had only said, if he eats kodshin, when he's tomei with a sheretz, and didn't say that tumas mes, you would think that maybe tumas mes, he'd be chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and vice versa. If it said only when he's tomei mes, then you would think if he's tomei sheretz, he's potter completely. Well, over my, well, what are we talking about? Ibit truma, aidi v'aidi huwa misa. If he's eating truma, when he's tomei with either one of those things, he's chayiv misa. So you can't say one, you can't say that no, he's chayiv only malchus. The two, and not only that, what would you mean? If you were to say that Braisa is referring to Truma, l'chach nemr chamuris tibalab, what do you mean? That because of that is why the Torah has to mention the more stringent ones and say that he's chayiv malchus. It's not. Habimisihi. The fact is that he's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim for eating Truma when he's tomei, no matter where he got the Truma from. And also the ilu lenemro, you say mamisa again. Dialogue and levom and adim is kenodin, so it can't be referring to truma. The e bachilas meiser, and if the Braisa is referring to eating meiser, what do you mean? Then it's the other way around. Ilu lenemro chamuris, you say emal chamuris mamisa. What do you mean? We would have thought that for the stringent things for being tomei mes, a person would be chayiv misa. Homi tumas sheretz kasi. Again, we're only learning it from tumas sheretz. The dial of omen adin li is kenodin. You can't, if you're going to argue that tumas sheretz, a person is chayiv malchus for eating maisa sheni when he's tumas sheretz, you can't now make him a chayiv misa by kavachoymer from that, because again, dial. So what does the Braisa mean exactly? Here's where we need Ziri's explanation in order to make the Braisa make sense. This is what Robert was saying. If you have a Braisa that you don't understand and you don't have an explanation from Ziri, then you're not going to really understand the Braisa. So Omer Ziri, kalos does mean tumas sheretz. Chamuris does mean tumas mes. But what it means is, v'hofi kama, even nemash tumas sheretz, v'nema maiser truma, v'nema tumas mes. If the Pasuk had mentioned only tumas sheretz, and it had said that both by Meister and by Truma that each one has its respective thing, Meister would be Malkus and Truma would be Nissa, Ha'isi Omer, then you would miss Volonemer Tumas Mess. If it didn't mention Tumas Mess in the Pasuk at all, Ha'isi Omer, then you would misunderstand Kalas, ala Kalas Falad, v'ala Chamuris v'misa. You would have thought, fine, what it means is when he's Tomer with Tumas Sheretz and he eats Meister, which are both things are lenient. Tumas Sheretz is only Tumah for the day, and Maisa Sheni is the most lenient of all those things. Then that would be where he gets Malkus. Vala Chamuris Lemisa, as far as Vala Chamuris Lemisa. But if you what?
But Tumas Mes.
But we didn't have Tumas Mes yet. Uh-huh. You would say on the Chamuris, on eating Truma, which is more Chomer, the Misa. Then there you'd say you get the Misa B'Neshemayim. Now you would think to derive Mid Kalas ala Chamuris for Misa. The same way as if he has a Tuma Kala, which is Sheretz, but he eats Chamuris, which is Truma, he's Chayim Misa, you would think Chamuris Nami ala Kalas for Misa. Maybe you would say the other way around then. If he's Tome with a more stringent Tuma, namely Tumas Mes, And he eats Maisa Sheni, then maybe he would also be Chayiv Misa. In other words, maybe you would say that he's Chayiv Misa if either one or the other is Chamuris, either the type of Tumah or the thing that he's trying to eat. So therefore, L'chach Nemru Chamuris, that is why the Torah specifies and mentions the Chamuris to tell you, even when it comes to Tumas Mes, which is the most stringent of all, there's never Chayiv Misa. When it comes to Maiser, only a Lav. So in short, the Torah has to specify all these types of tumah in order to explain to us that with Meiser, there's never going to be anything more than Malkus, even if he has the most chomer type of tumah.
But by which analogy would I come to the conclusion that it's one or the other?
Because we would say, you see that where a person is chayiv misa for eating tumah, even if he only has tumah sheretz. So therefore, you would think the same way as too much cheddar, which is kal, results in, but he's eating truma, which is chomer, gets a misubidei shemayim. So maybe the other way around as well. A more chomer truma, and a more chomer truma, tumas mes, should make him chayav misubidei shemayim, even if he's only eating meiser that's kal. Therefore, the Torah needs to specify and mention tumas mes in connection with meiser sheni to make it clear that no, all he's getting from meiser sheni, he's never getting anything more than malchus. And then for truma, he's always getting misubidei shemayim, whether it was kalos or chamuris. But therefore, that's why the Torah has to mention both types of truma and both types of eating, maaser sheni and truma.
How did you answer the question of diet? I don't know how the structure.
Because the Gemara had thought that we're just trying to make a kavah choymer. We're just trying to say madoch by maaser sheni, a person eats it, then he's chayav malchus. How much more so by truma, which is more stringent, he should be chayav misa. But that's not a diet. It contradicts that. So we would say the most you could say is if by maaser sheni he gets malchus, how much more so by truma he should get malchus. Still, where would we know that he's chayav misa b'dei shemayim? That is, it's not just a matter of a kavah choymer. Therefore, we're saying that is why the Torah has to spell out and mention Tumas Sheretz and Tumas Mes and Maisa Sheni and Truma in order to make it clear. Maisa Sheni is always Malchus. Truma is always Misa. It doesn't matter Talos or Chamuris in terms of the type of Truma.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point. So without Zairi explaining that whole point to us, we wouldn't understand the Braisa. This is what Rava meant. If you have a Braisa that you don't understand, you need Zairi to help you understand that Braisa. The same way as we said before about a Pasuk, if you don't have Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi explaining a pasuk to you, then you're not really going to understand the pasuk, as we said before about Rebbe's limud from the word va'ochal, how he gets from that it means tumas aguf and not tumas basar.
Thank you, everyone.